Adelphi is a racing club of like-minded people who enjoy horse racing and the camaraderie of being a part of something bigger than themselves. Adelphi offers an interactive ownership experience with real-time access to other partners, trainers, bloodstock advisors, and other members of the team, as well as frequent multimedia updates on their horses, including videos, photos, and partner-only podcast content provided by the In the Money Media team, as well as premium on-track and off-track hospitality experiences. Adelphi has an exciting class of yearling prospects, which are available now, including Salevo, a Street Sense filly headed to Ray Handel, and a yet-to-be-named Taprit colt who will be going to Christophe Clement in the spring. Join the club, Adelphi Racing Club. Hello and welcome everybody to a special edition of the In the Money Players podcast. It's only special because I'm hosting it. This, of course, is Nick Tamaro hosting, guest hosting for Peter Thomas Fornatel, who has taken a deserved Thanksgiving holiday. Very excited to be joined today by five guests. When Pete asked me to do this, you knew I was going to pack it as much as I possibly could because we've already had turkey. Now we have to have steaks. So we're going to have Scott Shapiro on to talk about Churchill Downs. We're going to have Klaus Ebner previewing a podcast that he's going to do about the Japan Cup. We're also going to have Blake Jesse to talk about Woodbine's late pick four on Saturday afternoon. We're going to have Howard Kravitz to talk about the Del Mar Stakes races on the Saturday program. And we're going to have the one and only Andy Serling to talk about the Aqueduct late pick five. Thanks for coming on board. Let's get started on this In the Money Players podcast. It's time to talk about Santa Anita's Ship and Win program going on right now. The Santa Anita Ship and Win program offers $5,000 cash bonuses for owners that ship to Santa Anita from outside California. Plus, Santa Anita will offer a 35% purse bonus to your horse's earnings in its initial race at the Great Race Place. Terms and conditions do apply, so give a call to Chris Mers, the racing secretary at Santa Anita, at 626-574-6472. That's 626-574-6472, and mention the Ship and Win bonus at Santa Anita Park. First up, joining me leading off on this In the Money Players podcast is my good friend Scott Shapiro from Churchill Downs. Scott's going to go through the late pick five on Saturday's card with us. Scott, what's going on, my man?
What's up, Nick? A big week of racing here in Louisville continues on. A couple graded stakes races for older horses. And then leading into this awesome Stars of Tomorrow 2 card, 12 races, awesome card throughout, full fields. Really excited for it.
Yeah, this is a fun card no matter what. I mean, it's a bit of an innervating task going through some of those maiden races early on, and I couldn't believe the overnight. I actually texted our mutual friend Travis Stone when the overnight came out, and I said, no discussion of Churchill field size on Saturday. First eight races all have 12 horses.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how well this card came together. Definitely some small field sizes throughout the middle part of this meet, but the last week has offered plenty of good wagering opportunities, and I think this is the best card we've put out all meet.
No, I agree. I mean, there's no doubt plenty of two-year-olds in wide supply in Kentucky. So let's get into it. The pick five starts with race number 8. It's at a mile and a 16th on the main track. Of course, this entire sequence is on the main track. Interested to hear what you had to say here, Scott, because I thought there was one horse among a few that looked like possible winners that I thought could offer a little value.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty intriguing race to handicap. I thought Mr. Boma was interesting on the rail, has battled through early, contentious early paces in his last couple of races. So it's had some excuses. I'm not sure if he's a true two-turn horse or not, but I think he could have it a little easier on the front end from the inside. I think Play Action Pass will take a lot of money, even though 8-1 on the morning line had an absolutely terrible trip last time. Did have a favorable race shape to run at. Corey Landry got to the inside like he likes to do from the far outside, but then got caught in a ton of trouble. The only concern is usually those horses tend to get over bet a little off those races. Now this horse draws towards the outside, and Edgar Zayas, who doesn't ride a lot at Churchill Downs, is going to have to navigate a trip, but certainly a horse I wouldn't let beat me. And then a couple of others. Red Run is a little intriguing to me, has underwhelmed so far, Nick, but this barn is really heating up. Steve Asmussen won 5 on Thursday. Joel's been his main man at the meet all meet long, and this horse could get a pretty good trip from out there. And then if you're looking for a price, maybe Rocket One, another one that could come from off the pace. I know he's raced over the turf in all three of the recent races, but the pedigree is really not screaming out turf to me. In fact, dirt could be the way to go here. And maybe just Belmont wanted two turn races and the turf ones were the ones available. Who did you, who were you fancied by?
I was Captain Obvious and like Play Action Pass. You know, and I do think I agree with your sentiment that horses like this, whose trouble is so defined, often get overbet. I have a little thing for Play Action Pass because I actually bet him two back to Keeneland. And I knew at the quarter pole, it was one of those situations where I was just going to piss and moan because he was a good horse that had an unfavorable setup and ended up tiring late. So I'm still not altogether certain he's a dirt horse, but I do think with a bit more, I would say a less unlucky trip, because I don't really want to put too much on Corey. Corey's done that with a lot of success over the years. Julien Lepreux had the audacity to not allow him through on the inside, which is okay. So we'll see if Play Action Pass can take to maybe the two-turn configuration a little bit better. But yeah, you're going to have to take a much shorter price, I think, than you'd certainly like. That leads us into the Lively Shively, which is race number 9, 6.5 furlongs on the main track. I believe this is a new stake race added to the Stars of Tomorrow card, an opportunity for some sprint horses. And, you know, the conversation here obviously starts with Tejano Twist. Did you think there was really anything beyond that?
Well, I mean, he's been super impressive in the last two. Has really taken a step forward. I thought he ran a winning race in the Remington Park event, the Kip DeVille that day, and Concept just got the jump on him and then really turned him away. And man, that last effort at Keeneland was pretty eye popping. So he's the obvious top pick in here. I think if you're going to try to beat him, you need to do it by getting the jump on him. And I did think that Chatelot ran really well over the surface, two back. I didn't like him at all that day on October 1st, and he proved me wrong with a pretty impressive effort, showing some grit in the lane to fight off the late running Nakatomi, who came back to win. And then the other one, Hoist the Gold, who gets Brian Hernandez Jr. now, a little bit of musical jocks in here trying to make sense of, but Brian Hernandez Jr. takes over for Tyler Gaffalione, draws to the outside now, has a lot of speed, could go at it with Chad a lot, but Brian pretty good at getting horses to relax. He's very mentally prepared, so he'll know probably to avoid an early duel if at all possible. So those would be the alternatives, but Tejano Twist, if he runs back to that race, is going to be extremely tough to deny.
Yeah, certainly validated that big speed figure, regardless of which speed figure you choose. Validated the big one at Remington Park and coming back and running as well as he did last time out at Keeneland. So I also thought that Chatelot had, you know, was a little interesting, obviously going to be well backed in here, but clearly ran during that period of the dark period for the Asmussen barn during the Keeneland meet. So you could see a little bit of a rebound potentially. I thought maybe one of the disadvantages with him is that I feel like he wants to be more of a stalking pressing type, and he might end up getting pushed into setting the pace in here, given that the two rivals to his inside look like they have no speed whatsoever. That takes us to the Golden Rod, one of the staples on the Stars of Tomorrow program. I thought this was a very interesting bunch, obviously headlined by Sandstone, recent rags to riches winner. It looked to me, Scott, like this race could have a frenetic early pace.
Well, that's what you need to hope for if you're going to try to beat Sandstone and Famed, who I think are two really talented fillies with bright futures. Clearly, to me, the best horses in this field. But as you said, there could be a lot of contention on the front end. And if so, the question is, who are you looking for to come from off the pace, either to get a slice or take the whole thing down at a pretty good price, which I think would bust this late pick five open and any other late horizontal wagers you're involved in. To me, the one that I'm interested in a little bit at a price is number 8, Code for Success, been freshened up a little bit by Vicky Oliver. Rafael Bejarano, you know, this guy was at the top of his game in California a while ago, really struggled for a while, came here to Kentucky, thought he was, you know, okay in his first several months here, but he's really found some good business, and he's been coming with a lot of off-the-pace type runners at good prices this meet. He's up in the top 5 in the leaderboard for jockeys at the meet, and he really doesn't get that many, you know, logical runners. That
super live mounts, right?
Yeah. And this horse really hasn't had setups in the last couple. I mean, Hidden Connection buried him two back in the Pocahontas. Maybe could have done a little more running that day, but, you know, she was a dominant runner that day. And then last time out, they basically, you know, the top 3 ran 1, 2, 3 around the racetrack with a little movement amongst those and finished 4th. So is she good enough to beat these? I think she'll need a meltdown, but I do think she's pretty interesting at a price.
Yeah, it's hard to make a living as a deep closer on the dirt. There's no question about it. But I also thought that she was potentially a little interesting with the setup. It's going to boil down to, you know, Sandstone is a horse that is coming in obviously off a very strong performance in winning the Rags to Riches. Again, a horse that earned a speed figure that no matter which one you use, it was certainly very fast. But at the same time, it was a 4-horse race. You know, Yagiri, who finished a distant second, certainly doesn't look like one of the top shelf 2-year-olds around right now. my sort of wild horse that is going to need to improve by leaps and bounds, no question about it, was Secret Oath. And Secret Oath's going to have to get much, much better. I have no doubt in my mind. But Absinthe Minded was a later developing horse that Dwayne Lucas trained as well. And obviously the progeny of Arrogate seemed to be getting better with experience. You know, does she have a 20-plus point move up, whether you're looking at buyer figures or Brisnet or anything like that? I don't know, but she's going to be a big enough price to try. So yeah. I wanted to see if maybe I could make that happen.
She ran really well last time. I'm suspect of the group, but that was a really, you know, eye-popping to an extent for the level of performance. Again, you said it best. I mean, she's going to have to step up, but she's certainly capable. It's not like the coach has his horses cranked at first and second asking, so they definitely always have steps forward if they have talent.
Right, and we'll take a shot with this type at 15-1, not at 5-1. So that's the Goldenrod, a really interesting running. Speaking of interesting runnings of races, the Kentucky Jockey Club drew a field of 14. Classic Causeway, who had the far outside post in the Breeders' Futurity, is now back on the inside in the Kentucky Jockey Club. He is the second choice on the morning line to Tis the Bomb. Were you landing on one of these two, Scott, or are you going elsewhere?
Well, I think Tis the Bomb is an interesting fade, if indeed he's the favorite. I mean, I think this is somewhat of an afterthought, kind of an angle that might be worthwhile taking a chance against in general. These Breeders' Cup horses, you know, running after the race, and obviously a turf horse, ran well that day from off the pace. Classic Causeway to me. It sounds like Brian Lynch is trying to teach this horse to relax based on some of the comments he's made about what he's been doing in the morning. And, you know, no one better to do that than Joel Rosario. The question is, from the rail, is that going to be advantageous to do so? If they try, it could work perfectly with a pocket trip, or it could end up being a disaster. I thought Howling Time was going to take a lot of money. Wouldn't be surprised, in fact, if he goes off favored just with the Dale Roman's buzz. When the horses get buzz here, they definitely take a lot of money. I know it's a big day and there'll be a lot of money in the pool. You know, at a price, I'm not sure if we'll get 12-1. I was interested in the other Kenny McPeak horse. I ended up picking this horse at 12-1 on the line, number 8, Smile Happy. We'll need to step up. But man, that was a really professional effort from off the pace on debut. Ran a big number in the metrics that I look at. 3-1, took significant money. I don't know what he beat that day, but he certainly did it well. And normally I'd be like, oh, Brian Hernandez Jr. is riding Tis the Bomb, not this one. You know, but I don't really think you have a choice. You run the Breeders' Cup Juvenile with Tis the Bomb and you run second. You're not going to come back and get on a maiden winner. But, you know, price-wise, Smile Happy, I think, is the likeliest to maybe be able to spring the upset. The logicals I'll use are Classic Causeway and Howling Time.
Yeah, I love the thought on Smile Happy. I thought he was very interesting. And, you know, the interesting thing to me about him is that not only did he sort of loop the field and draw off and win, he was never really that far off that pace. And that was a very, very strong early pace. So, you know, this is a horse that in a race that, I mean, if you're a Timeform US user, this does have is coded red as a likely fast pace. I think that's in large part because of the bulky field. Because it does look like Classic Causeway should clear this field if, you know, Joel Rosario so chooses. And I don't like hearing that they're talking about relaxing or rating or anything like that. That would obviously, from the rail, would potentially be a very, very big mistake. A reference, you know, our old friend Hidden Scroll in the Florida Derby a couple of years ago, but not to talk about him again. But Classic Causeway's one advantage is speed. So hopefully they're going to take advantage of that. I don't think they should be dissuaded by him tiring in the race in the Breeders' Futurity, because the pace was strong and he was trying to come from the outside, which is not, you know, the most ideal circumstance. My archaic AirPods or AirBuds, I guess you call these, fell out, but I'm good to go. So interesting race. You know, Wyda Barrio comes up from Gulfstream for Safi Joseph Jr. He ran a very, very solid race on debut, was privately purchased out of there and came back and ran pretty well in a one other than. We don't always see a lot of one other thans for these levels, other than maybe a place like Churchill. This is a horse that I thought would kind of probably be a pace casualty. Did you feel similarly?
I thought so too. I mean, it just doesn't seem like this form translates that well out of town, especially Gulfstream in the summer and the fall. You know, the championship means a different story, but you know, the fact that they privately purchased him, shipped him in, and he ran well again is encouraging. You know, maybe he gets aggressive. Edgar Zayas gets aggressive and sends aggressively, and it allows Joel Rosario to sit second. I agree with you on Classic Causeway, though. I mean, trying to relax from the rail, probably not ideal. But yeah, I was willing to let Wyda Barrio beat me. I just haven't really seen Safi Joseph ship these kinds of horses out of town, especially into Kentucky, and win. But probably that'll happen before long. I mean, the guy obviously is very capable.
Right. I have only anecdotal information My production assistant should have pulled some data on Breeders' Cup horses coming back, but I don't have a production assistant. So that's something I'll take up with the PTF. But, you know, it seems like over the years, it's been very difficult, especially with the early November date for the Breeders' Cup to come back and win around Thanksgiving weekend. I mean, I remember back, of course, to upsets like Midnight Loot in the Cigar Mile, and there have been a lot more of those. So we'll see if Tis the Bomb can maybe buck that trend and get the job done here in the Kentucky Jockey Club, delivering Kenny McPeak a win there. That takes us to the nightcap, which is the Fern Creek, 6.5 furlongs on the dirt. This is the sister race of the Lively Shively, and which is run earlier on the program. I thought this was a tough race. You have the principals from the Myrtlewood at Keeneland coming back, including the four Very Little Sense and the winner that day, Sweet Danny Girl, who's going to try and make it 3 for 3.
Yeah, Very Little Sense ran well that day, but it was a speed-favoring racetrack where Can't Believe It, it was a first-out winner for Jimmy DeVito, and this Daughter of Golden Sense, you know, ran one, you know, battled early through pretty quick early fractions, but over a favorable racetrack for their running style. I thought Sweet Danny Girl, who beat Famed on debut at a huge price, came back, took a ton of late money, ran very well again with a stalking trip, which you might say was a perfect trip, but running down speed horses over a speed favoring racetrack must be respected. You know, she's going to be a tough horse for me to leave out. My top pick in the end is going to be Matarea. I think we'll really appreciate the cutback. Was taken off the pace in the Alcibiades set, kind of third or fourth. You know, there was a runoff leader in that race. And then Juju's Map, who ran well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, was not enough for Echo Zulu and didn't get off to a good start, but certainly flattered the form of General. And I just think this horse should appreciate the cutback. And then it's hard to knock Marissa's Lady. That race came back very fast on debut. And trainer Billy Morey, definitely not that guy that has great numbers first out, generally takes big steps forward with his runners second time out. Whether, you know, she'll be able to replicate that effort right back in the second lifetime start, first time against winners. Not very creative in here, Nick. You got anything more creative than I do?
Not really. I thought Marissa's Lady was very impressive. I'm a little worried. I think there was one run back in there that didn't do all that great. I don't know how much it matters because these two, it felt like a 1-2 type of race, right? I mean, it felt like Marissa's Lady and Promises to Dance, who was second, were really the two that you'd be looking at moving forward. But making that big, you know, sort of four wide move into a pace that really set up favorably for the eventual runner up, I was taken by that performance. I thought that she would be very tough. If I was making a top pick, I would make it her. I agree with you on Matarea. I think these are interesting cutbacks because they're kind of, it's a speed cutback, but it's a Rosario cutback. So even though this horse probably wants to be forwardly placed, Joelle's going to take her back a little bit and let everything happen in front of him, survey the situation, then make that move. And you always want him on a horse that's producing that late run. I think we've seen it enough now at this this Churchill meet that he joined, about a week after it started, week and a half after it started. And I want to say he's fourth in the jockey standings.
Yeah, right after the Breeders' Cup, he came. I don't think he came that Sunday. I think he came that following Wednesday. And yeah, I mean, he's gotten obviously a lot of good mounts. He's become Steve Asmussen's number one guy during this hot run. He hasn't been on all of his winners, but, you know, a lot of guys obviously want to use Joelle, one of the best riders in the country, probably the best when he's on his game. You know, sometimes he loses focus, it seems, a little bit. But I'm with you. I think the speed cutback can be a concern sometimes, but when you leg up a guy like Joelle, you would think the plan would be to take back a little bit at least and make one run.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, I can't thank you enough. Let everybody know where they can find a little more information about you on Twitter and obviously on the Churchill Downs broadcast.
Yeah, Scott Schapp, at Scott Schapp 34 is the Twitter feed, Nick, and we'll be on the Churchill Downs broadcast over the last, well, when this goes out, the last 2 days of the meet, Saturday and Sunday. Should be a great day of wagering, of course, for the Stars of Tomorrow 2 card, as I've said at the beginning. And then Sunday, mandatory payouts. If it doesn't get hit, which it could on this card, very challenging sequence, it'll have to go on Sunday. So 12 races both days, should be a lot of fun, some full fields.
We look forward to joining you on that Churchill Downs broadcast, seeing what takes place there. We thank you again for joining. I thank you for joining me and coming on and handicapping. And I'll certainly talk to you down the road as you get through this long, cold winter waiting for Derby of 2022.
Brr. Thanks for having me, Nick.
Thanks again, Scott. Take care. All right. Next up in the batter's box, we have Klaus Ebner joining us to talk about the Japan Cup, because on the In the Money Players podcast, it doesn't matter where it occurs on the globe, we're talking about it. The Japan Cup will take place on Sunday. Klaus is here to talk to us a little bit about it. Klaus, how are you?
Good, Nick. How's it going?
And it's going great. Great to meet you in this virtual fashion. We talked about how we'll get together in person at the symposium in a couple of weeks in Tucson. Greatly looking forward to it. I will admit, I spent a decent amount of time familiarizing myself with this Japan Cup field, and it looks like a pretty interesting one, given some of the background of the main players and the fact that you do have a little bit of international participation as well.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, you just mentioned it's it was kind of hard for them last year to have some, you know, the international competitors in there. But yeah, certainly we have, you know, a filly coming from France who competed in the Prix de l'Opera. And they also have two of the horses that competed, you know, the second place finisher. Not sure about you, but I know I had some money on Broome. And when Ortiz made that move, I was like, oh, well, counting the cash. And then sure enough, it just, you know, your beer got us in the last couple of strides. And, you know, it would have made for a better day, a British Cup day, but that's okay. But yeah, you know, you have, I guess you want to call both Broome and Japan globetrotters for Aidan O'Brien, and they've been back and forth across the globe. So we'll see how they do here. It's been a long season, and it'll be tough for them.
Yeah, Japan, of course, who was second locally in America in the Sword Dancer, and then actually finished fourth in the Breeders' Cup Turf. Count me among those who had no idea he finished fourth in the Breeders' Cup Turf.
same here. So yeah.
So tell us a little bit, actually, if you don't mind, how has Aidan O'Brien had any success in the Japan Cup? I know he's done well in Hong Kong, but I didn't believe that he had in Japan.
Well, yeah. So the thing is that foreign horses on the whole have just been trounced, if you want to call it that, by the local horses, I'd say for the past 16 years. So the last foreign horse to actually win in Japan was Alcocet, and that was in 2005, I believe, with Frankie Dettori. So it's been a huge dry spell. And I just think that, you know, how the calendar sort of plays out is that, you know, the Arc, Breeders' Cup Turf, you know, those are sort of like the key races towards the end of the season for most of these European horses, as well as, you know, American horses or, you know, horses in North America. So I think the Japan Cup a lot of times now is an afterthought, whereas, you know, the locals, that's for them. You know, if you're an older horse that wants to go a mile and a half or give or take, this is the race you're pointing for. And, you know, you kind of catch a lot of the Europeans that are, you know, again, the likes of Japan and Broome have been, again, like I said, globetrotters are probably going to be a little bit tired from the ship and everything else too. You know, you're not shipping from, like, you know, Kentucky to Chicago. You're going from, you know, Del Mar over across the ocean to Japan. So a little different story.
Right. And of course, I don't want your expertise wasted on a couple of horses that ultimately are going to be huge long shots. So let's talk a little bit about Contrail, who's the anti-post favorite. I found him on Odds Checker at about 4-7, which felt like that was probably maybe a little lower than he'd end up being. But this is a horse, of course, who has a huge background, ended up getting a little time off in the middle of the year, came back with a really good second in this no-show autumn.
Yeah, for sure. So I can see you did your homework, Nick. That's great. So
long Thanksgiving night.
Oh, good. Oh, good. No worries. Turkey and Japan. That's good.
That's right.
Certainly Contrail was sort of the hype horse going into this year. Triple Crown winner last year, of course, being by Deep Impact. And he's kind of looked at as sort of the heir apparent now in the stud farm because he's going to retire after this race. In my opinion, I don't think we've seen the real Contrail this year in terms of his starts. You know, his first start back was in the Osaka High. That day was a bog, and those that are kind of the pedigree aficionados that kind of follow Deep Impact offspring, they don't like the off going. It's just one of those things where if it's soft, you know, they're not probably going to run that well. You know, he put in a good effort to finish third, I believe, in that race, but, you know, that took a lot out of him. They came back, like you said, in the Tenno show, and, you know, I think he ran his race, but he just got beaten by a superior horse in the form of Euphoria. Euphoria, the Satsuki show, where the 2000 Guineas winner lost by a dirty nose, and I'm still kind of upset about that loss in the Derby for Euphoria. But Euphoria is, in my opinion, probably the best horse in Japan right now. He's only a 3-year-old, and nothing against Contrail. You know, obviously he ran in this race last year, finished a valiant second to the brilliant mare Almond Eye. But again, I just think there's some chinks in his armor. He's had some issues with the starting gate over the past couple of starts as well. So, you know, I'm willing to take a stand against him in this race and you know, roll the dice with, you know, the 3-year-olds. There's 2 3-year-olds in here. We have the Derby winner in here. We have the Oaks winner in here as well. So, in my opinion, the 3-year-olds and the 4-year-olds are the ones to beat in here.
Yeah, it sounds like a very, very interesting event. And of course, we don't want you to give away too much because you are going to be putting a little bit more on our airwaves. Tell everybody what they can find specifically focusing on this race moving forward.
Yeah, sure. So it's great tonight. As you mentioned, Nick, we're going to have a special Japan Cup pod. Myself, Robert, and Candace will be all on there, getting the gang back together, if you will, kind of talking about Japan Cup, some of our selections. So again, we'll have a lot of meat in there in terms of, you know, our thoughts and some, and, you know, analysis of the race, what we think, and some selections. And then we'll kind of follow it up with on Saturday. So our Saturday, which is the Sunday in Japan when the race happens. We'll have the analysis, the free PPs as we usually do. And then we'll also do a stakes analysis of the race itself. So yeah, we certainly will have nose to tail coverage of the Japan Cup for everyone. That's for sure.
No, that's great. Tremendous amount of content coming forward. So in advance, of course, of everybody listening to that podcast, the race itself is going to run, obviously, here in America. It's going to be, what, shortly after midnight?
Yeah, so it's going to be around 1:40, Nick. So 1:40 a.m. On the East Coast.
Okay, 1:40 a.m. Eastern. So, yeah, you can apply your appropriate time zone.
10:40 Pacific. Yeah. Let's go with
10:40 Pacific. I'm a central time zone guy, so yeah, 12:40 right, for me. Yeah. So if you're up a little late, certainly, hopefully recapping your wins from Saturday. From everybody else that we've had on the podcast, and of course, putting a little money towards what you're advised to do by Klaus and Robert and Candace.
Yeah, and again, we'll have it all covered off, and hopefully we'll have some winners. It usually is a tough card, but again, it's the Japan Cup, one of the best races in Japan, if not the world. So make sure you, I guess we always say, make a date and stay up late. So there we go.
Absolutely. Eagerly awaiting that. Klaus, thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to meeting you in person, having done so now in this virtual fashion. And I'm definitely looking forward to the Japan Cup. I'm going to have to put on a little extra coffee maybe to make it until 12:40 on Saturday, early Sunday morning, but I think it's in my plans.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks for watching, Nick. Have a good day.
Thanks, Klaus. Take care. All right. Next up, we have my friend Blake Jesse here to talk about the Woodbine Pick 4, the $100,000 guaranteed Pick 4. I will bring everybody a bit of laughter about this. Of course, this is my first time guest hosting for PTF. I communicated with my guests pretty regularly throughout the week, trying to line up as many as possible. I told Blake the Pick 4 at Woodbine, the Pick 4 at Woodbine, the Pick 4 at Woodbine. I started talking about the Kennedy Road and Pink Lloyd, and Blake reminded me that that's not the Pick 4 that we were talking about. That's the Pick 4 that starts on race number 8. We're going to talk about the Pick 4 that begins on race number 4. With that preamble aside, Blake, good morning. How are you? Good Thanksgiving. Ready to roll?
Oh, yeah, ready to roll. Happy to have Turkey Day behind us and ready to fire on this Woodbine Pick 4.
No question about it. You, of course, are just killing time until your Colts play again on Sunday, coming in off that huge win last week, which was a profitable day for the Twitter followers. You're doing a good job. This is a cheeky way of adding a lot of Twitter followers.
It is. And, it's just something that I like to do to give back to the gambling community. You know, it's just a kind of a degen throwout.
We are a downtrodden and largely forgotten lot, so it is nice to see. Let's get started talking about this Woodbine Pick 4, which begins, of course, in race number 4. That's at 2:32 Eastern time. This looked like an awfully competitive race to me. You do have a morning line favorite taking a precipitous drop in class in the 2 Lion Kingdom.
Yeah, you know, Nick, 3 Life, 10,000 claimers. I really am having a tough time getting past the 2 here. You know, although he's only had one, on the board finish in this on the synthetic, he's just been running against much tougher. So I am going to have to use the 2 as an A in here, Lion Kingdom. But, you know, the horse to its inside, Super Cohiba, very consistent. 6 starts on the all weather with 5 in the money finishes. So definitely not going to be forgetting to use him. So 1 and 2 are A's in here. I do have a price horse that, just trying to get creative and using here. And that's the 3 Show Me Your Spots. This trainer, don't know much about him, but he's got limited stock and high numbers. And the horse has some back numbers. So if he's able to get it to, draw off that back class, maybe he can run one of those big races he's got from back in 2020. So I'll use Show Me Your Spots sparingly, but 1 and 2 is A's and 3 as a backup.
I will admit my familiarity with Jelko Kirkmar is pretty limited as well, other than saying that his name would be great in a Wheel of Fortune episode. It would be very not be advantageous to buy a vowel. Moving along to race number 5. This is, of course, at Woodbine at 6.5 furlongs, a maiden optional claiming event. We've got some first-time starters to deal with here. One of the good things is that you'll be able to see, you'll get a slight window into what could go on with the rolling double. Of course, it begins on race number 4. It does look, though, and I'm interested to see if you feel the same way, that the experienced runners look like a pretty solid enough group to maybe land on one of them.
Yeah, I do think that you're going to want to use, you know, the five load abroad here, taking the blinkers off. Really, you know, I'm not sure that the blinkers have any factor at all here, but the horse is awfully consistent. It's been knocking on the door. So definitely going to be using load abroad as an A in here. You know, a horse to the outside that I'm against is Sacred Dancer, you know, having run once and finished second, you know, didn't really do a whole lot wrong, but what I've noticed here is Justin Stein's opting to ride the firster for Kevin Attard, the three Pleasures Gold. So I'm going to use the three just, you know, off the jockey musical chairs there. So Pleasures Gold is an A as well. And I'll use the eight Dazzling Diva, who I think, you know, with the addition of blinkers, looks like this is an equipment change that could help this filly. So three, five, and eight as A's. Nick's, you know, as far as some prices here to back up with, I thought the six Phil and Echo, you know, had the rail first start of its life and, you know, showed a little bit of speed and, you know, just kind of went around there. And, you know, I like horses getting off the rail in its second start. So we'll see if Adamar Santos can't, you know, move this one forward in the second start. So Phil and Echo as a backup. And I'm also going to use the first time starter here, Talk to You Later. Imogene Wilson. Ian Black's not, you know, anything hot with firsters or two-year-olds or anything, but this one just looks to be in the right spot here, you know, working, you know, fairly well, got a, you know, 48 flat breezing from the gate leading up to this. So I'll use Talk to You Later as a backup. And another one I'm going to use out here on the far outside is Lady Fortune. Kev Nichols riding here in the second start. Didn't do anything wrong in the first start. And if I can build off that one, you know, could be a price that gets things going here for us. So six, seven, and 10 as backups and three, five, and eight as A's.
Yeah, I thought Lady Fortune was potentially interesting as a second time starter, having made up some ground on debut, broke towards the inside in that pack as well. Certainly big experience factor there. Moving along to race number six. This is a maiden special weight event at a mile and a 16th. Bulky field going postward here, as you would expect. And it looks as if, you know, I think you could probably have a couple of different horses who could end up favored here. The three Spanish Prince is 4-1 on the morning line. The one Ralphie Boy is 3-1. I would suppose that with the good inside post and promising debut effort, Ralphie Boy will end up taking the bulk of the action.
I would have to agree with you. You know, the horse on the very far outside, Hall of Dreams, you know, got a big figure, but you know, I'm really not sure how to, you know, gauge these, you know, these restricted special weights, the, you know, the horses that, you know, went to auction for $40,000 or less. You know, I'm not really sure how to gauge, you know, gauge these horses yet, but nonetheless, the horse ran really well. It was disqualified for some interference in the lane, but I do think you need to use the horse, but I do have the other two that you mentioned, Ralphie Boy and Spanish Prince, as the other logicals in here. You know, some firsters that I think need to be talked about are the Cassie. I mean, he's got the five that he paid $395,000 for, and he's got the seven that he paid $560,000 for. You know, the seven I'm a little bit hesitant on being a June foal. You know, I'm, you know, make what you will of that, but you know, 560,000 quality road, you don't really want to get beat by that. So I'll back up with the five and the seven, and also a horse on the far outside that's giving me some intrigue here is Hidasa's Devil. You know, I just think maybe two turns is one, you know, something that will fit this horse. So I'll use that one sparingly as well. So five, seven, and 10 is backups, but I'm pretty confident that we can get through here with the 1, 3, or 12.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think when push comes to shove, Ralphie Boy should be pretty tough to beat. Well, the payoff leg is going to be race number seven at Woodbine. That's at 7 furlongs on the Tapita surface. This is another race, I think, where I know this is my kind of horse, even though he's been getting a lot of favorable pace setups. Lapochka looks like a really interesting cutback to me. It appears as if there should be enough pace in here. Was that something that you generally agree with, or were you looking elsewhere, Blake?
You know, I obviously think that Lapochka is a player in here. I didn't think there was that much speed in here personally, but, you know, I'm definitely not going to allow myself to get beat by Lapochka. But I really felt like the six Sir Seamus, you know, could have a situation where, you know, race all to itself out front. So I will try Sir Seamus on top in here, and Lapochka and Told It All are the other two that, you know, just seem ultra logical. One other horse that I wanted to touch on in here was Sandy Bay. You know, has some races earlier in the year, like the race back in August 8th. You know, if you could draw off a race like that in here, you know, has a good post to kind of watch everything go down. So the 9 Sandy Bay sparingly, but most of my tickets are going to be 6 over the 2 and 3.
I'll give you a long shot underneath tie. Probably can't win, but the 7 Self-Made, big time trouble last time out, needs to be given one more shot. This is our friend Jelko Kirkmar, who has done well with the meet, hitting at a 20% clip. Emma Jane Wilson getting back on board. She was the winning jockey 2 starts back. That's the pick 4 at Woodbine. Blake, I can't thank you enough for taking a look at it. Of course, looking at the right races after I amended it a little bit. I promise next time I'll make sure I give you the right ones off the bat.
Not a worry, buddy. Glad we could do it today.
Definitely, for sure. Thanks again, Blake, for joining us. And thanks to our good friends at Woodbine, who have been a faithful sponsor of the In the Money Media Network. All right, we're going to move along. Next up, joining me, Howard Kravitz. Howard taking a little bit of a different role, at least the last couple of times he and I have talked. He's been hosting and I've been the guest, but we're going to flip-flop it. And I'm hosting this time around and have Howard on. Very happy to have Howard to talk about the 3 stakes races on Saturday's Del Mar card. Howard, what's going on, my man?
Hey, Nick, how you doing? I'm doing fantastic. A little sleepy from that turkey, but I think we'll be able to manage to give the listeners some excellent picks for Saturday Del Mar. What a great card they've got.
No question about it. As far as medication goes for this show, we're all tryptophan on with turkey being in full effect. And as you mentioned, there are 3 graded stakes races. I'm sorry, 2 graded stakes races, I believe. I don't know if the 7th is graded. It doesn't really matter. But this is always a fun weekend. I think back to this weekend being at Hollywood Park over the years and looking forward to the Hollywood Derby. Glad, of course, that they kept the same name for that race. But the first of the 3 stakes that we're going to talk about is race number 5. That's the Seabiscuit. It's going to go at 2:32 local time. That's going to be 5:32 in the Eastern time zone. And one of the things we've seen over the years, Howard, is that Chad Brown has done incredibly well when he has shipped horses out west for this particular weekend. Last year, he had one of the better slates that he's had of the entire time he's been shipping horses out there. And he looks pretty well represented this time around, specifically in this race with the morning line favorite Sacred Life, as well as the ever capable Flop Shot.
Yeah, I'm not getting too creative here. I mean, Sacred Life 8-5 morning line. You know, he just classes over these horses. I think my only concern with Sacred Life, Nick, is the pace situation. I don't know if there's a lot of release speed, but Sacred Life has just got an unbelievably nasty kick. Last time that this horse ran in the Knickerbocker, and go ahead and watch that race. I mean, Field Pass got loose as can be on the lead and pretty, you know, slow pace. And Sacred Life came home final quarter, Nick, 22-4. How about a final 8th in 10-4? You don't see too many sub, you know, final 8ths lower than 11. And not only that, Sacred Life was sort of bottled up until really beyond the final turn, and still was able to catch Field Pass. So if you want to compare those two, to me, it's not even close. I suppose the other horse that could win would be the other, you know, Chad Brown in here, Flop Shot. But Flop Shot to me seems a little more one-paced, while Sacred Life really has got a, you know, big late burst. And going a mile of 16th on that turf course, Nick, I just think Sacred Life, with any kind of decent trip, is just going to come over the top and get the job done.
Yeah, I think the only angle with Flop Shot, of course, Chad Brown has tremendous numbers taking blinkers off. I wonder, to an extent, if maybe Flop Shot was a little headstrong in his last 2 starts. Not so much two starts ago, but last time he was a little aggressive. We don't generally see Chad Brown horses show big speed. You don't get a lot of red Timeform US running lines from Chad Brown horses either. So maybe being a little bit more relaxed early could make the difference. But yeah, you referenced that Sacred Life. We've seen, if you watch the Naira broadcast regularly, our friend Andy Serling has talked about how he bet Field Pass that day. And when you watch the replay, Sacred Life isn't even in the picture until just inside the 8th pole. And if you're watching the replay and you know, it's one of those races where you're thinking, there's no way this horse could possibly lose. And here comes Sacred Life to get him right at the end. It is, Sacred Life does have a bit of a flair for the dramatic. His 2 most recent wins, of course, he only has a couple of wins in the last 2 years. They've both been impressive. The latest of which, of course, was the Knickerbocker, where he came from out of the clouds, and the Oceanport last year, he just absolutely ripped their faces off. So he's a very, very good horse. Went on his game. Jose Ortiz will be out to ride He was aboard in that aforementioned Knickerbocker win. That does move us along to the second of the three stakes, which is graded for what it's worth for anybody scoring at home. If I get corrected at the end of the show, this will be one of the things that comes on the scorecard. But it's the Jimmy Durante, a grade three, going a mile on the turf. This, of course, is the counterpart, the female counterpart to the Cecil DeMille, which will be run on Sunday. This is an interesting bunch, a bulky field coming forward. You've got a lot of horses that have dabbled in stakes races, some recent maiden winners, including the impressive Tesere, who won on Breeders' Cup week. But it does look like favoritism will go to the outside, more than likely to Helen's Well or perhaps Sparkle Blue. What were you thinking here, Howard?
So I've talked about this aspect for quite a while, since last year on my own podcast and also with Matt Bernier. And that aspect is the fact that horses coming out of the Breeders' Cup that run this Thanksgiving weekend just completely underperform almost every single time. So Helen's Well, the 11, is probably going to be the favorite just because, you know, she's coming out of the Breeders' Cup, is going to be a complete underlay. I am against Helen's Well. I'm using her only as a seahorse, an ABC ticket, extreme backup. Of course she could win, but I think she might be lower than that. What is it, 7-2, I believe, that 7-2 morning line that we see. And interestingly enough, I'm much more interested, Nick, in the other D'Amato. There's two D'Amatos in this race, two Doug O'Neill horses, and three Peter Miller. So there's a lot of interesting angles there to go through if you like any of those trainers. But before I talk about the other D'Amato, let me discuss my top pick. You mentioned Tesere already. I know you're very big on the visuals, Nick, as am I. I think she was ultra impressive. I know she only got a 67 buyer, and in theory is a little bit slower than some of these. But, you know, she had to wait also, not too dissimilar from Sacred Life, although she was on the outside and was, of course, a completely different field, etc. But just in terms of Tesere having to wait, and then, Ired Ortiz swung her out. She came home very well. I just love the visual here. It was her first time here in the States. I think she's going to improve quite a bit for Peter Miller, and I'm expecting Ired to get Tesere home. The other horse that I just want to mention was that second D'Amato horse, that's the 8, Virulente, who last time raced at Lyon des Anjouins. How about that? I've been working on my French.
Very nice. That's strong.
I actually watched that replay. I think it's important to do these things for the Euros. And I don't know who she was facing, Nick, but she came home very well. Again, it was very impressive on the visual. I don't mind Drane Van Dyke on this horse. And also, you don't see Bullet Works too often for a Euro coming here first time. And the second to last work was a minute and three, handily. So I didn't see the work, but looks like maybe a private purchase, with Madcat Stables. I think the 8, Virulente, is very, very interesting here as the other D'Amato.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that sentiment. Of course, this is a sharp ownership group that's really going to get involved when they can find the right horses. D'Amato has tremendous numbers with horses coming back or coming into America just in the last couple of years, hitting a better than $3 ROI clip. But I know over the last 5 years, it's a positive ROI as well. It's funny that you bring up Breeders' Cup alums, because earlier in the show, I was talking to Scott Shapiro from Churchill, and I said I only have anecdotal information. I did not have anybody pull data, but I would love to actually find a way to go through and see how some of these horses have done. It feels as if they've underperformed on a regular basis, so I don't blame you. I did think Helen's Well had a trip last time, not so much a particularly troubled trip, but she got a little headstrong with Umberto Rispoli, made an early move, and really was kind of in no man's land, 2-3 paths off the rail. But I was much hoping that she wouldn't come back until the winter or spring at Santa Anita and get a little bit of time. I don't blame them for trying. There aren't a lot of opportunities to get graded black type at 2 on the turf. So we'll see if Helen's Well can at least run back to some of those good efforts in the Surfer Girl and the Juvenile Phillies turf right here at Del Mar. We want to make sure we have plenty of time to talk about the Hollywood Derby, which goes as race number 9. That's 4:29 Pacific time. This is a really, really fascinating race. The final grade one of the year for three-year-olds on the turf, a mile and an eighth here, and contention runs awfully deep. I think that's a bit of an understatement, right, Howard?
I mean, this is going to be an absolute war. This is one of my favorite races, by the way, Nick, every single year. Last year, we saw a pretty good horse win in domestic spending. I don't think there's any domestic spendings in this race, but when you go down the PPs, and I'm more of a buyer guy, everyone has a different, speed figure they like to look at. There are, 6, 7, 8 horses that are all right around, you know, high 80s, low 90 buyers, except one that stands out that I'm sure we'll mention. This is going to be very trip dependent, you know, very jockey dependent. And I mean, this is an absolute spread if you're playing a late pick five, I would think.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. I mean, I guess we can start our conversation with Public Sector. He's a horse that I've bet a couple of times, and the most recent of which was at Saratoga. And I think after he won, when he came back in the Saranac, I thought, you know, me and Public Sector are done. I've gotten the money when he's been very, very fortunate. He came up the inside that day to win the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame. This is a horse who I've probably not given enough credit. I still wonder, though, if he's good enough to handle a task like this. Feels as if he's going to get a tremendous amount of support because of who his trainer is, more so than what we've seen in his running lines. Because, I mean, at least in my opinion, and I'd love to hear if you feel differently, Camp Hope and Subconscious have run at least as good, more than likely better than him, at least now a couple of times apiece.
Yeah, and Public Sector, I agree with you. I was against him last time. I thought in the Hall of Fame, the Saranac, Nick, he just got dream trips and still won. And I will admit to everyone that I was against him in the Hill Prince. Still got the job done. So against a nice horse and never surprised. So I agree that Public Sector is probably a little bit underrated. But, you know, I would never bet a horse at 5-2 if he's that morning line on the win end. In this field, you mentioned two horses that I'm definitely using in my pick five, but are not my top picks. Camp Hope, you know, I don't want to give any disrespect to Tiago Pereira. I mean, he's won some big races in his career, but I don't think of Tiago Pereira as really a great turf rider. You look at the numbers of Camp Hope, 95, 96 buyers in his last two. I mean, you've got to respect this horse. He's got tactical speed. I'm using Camp Hope as a B. I see no reason why he can't win. Ken McPeak just got a win in the Breeders' Cup, of course, on a turf horse. So there's no reason he can't train a turf horse and win here. I don't know, Nick. It's the jockey thing and the fact that this horse is, you know, obviously coming in from Keeneland, an excellent circuit, but first time, you know, coming west. There's just some things that can cause for pause, but, you know, there's no reason Camp Hope cannot get the job done. Subconscious I've had the last two times. I loved his effort two back. I thought it was very impressive. I couldn't believe I was getting 8-1 on this horse for, you know, Mandela. Last time, yes, he won well, but, you know, he got a dream trip just tracking. Boy, now I'm losing. Who did he beat? Who was on the lead last time? Big favorite.
I don't remember who.
Just retired. I'm Rock Your World. I'm sorry.
Rock Your World, right.
I know, Rock Your World. What a crazy career he had. Anyway, was tracking Rock Your World. Rock Your World just gave it up completely, and he went by. So, you know, Subconscious can win, but I'm interested, Nick, in a horse that is coming out of that race that we have not mentioned yet.
And I'm wondering who that might be. I probably have a guess because he had a little bit of trouble along the way. Tell us a little bit about who you've teased us so properly about.
Yeah, my top choice is going to be Kathkin Peak. Now, I just literally saw the morning line this morning, Nick, and I see 6-1. I think I might want to ask for a little bit more from a value perspective, but I think you folks need to watch the replay on Kathkin Peak last time. First of all, this horse is improving. I don't know how many horses are really improving. You know, right now, there's a lot of horses that seem to be pretty steady. This horse ran a 70 buyer in La Jolla, then got an 84 in the Del Mar Derby, and last time, ran his best race by far in the Twilight Derby. And what I like about that race is he came up the inside and was closing big time by far, Nick, by far, closing better than anyone else. Was 26-1 that day, and you're going to get a lot less on Saturday. But I think distance is helping. And the most important thing I'll say about this horse is he was showing early speed earlier, was rank. You know, it looked like they couldn't really control the horse as well as they wanted. This horse is learning to relax. D'Amato's got the horse pointed in the right direction and picks up Flavian. A lot of things to like about Kathkin Peak. The only issue, Nick, 13-horse field coming from behind. He's going to have to work out an unbelievably good trip, but I'm extremely intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's an Flavian I trust, right? I mean, if you're going to take that gamble, obviously, you know, higher the price, the better, no question about it. But I think 8 or 10 to 1 on this horse seems like it would be fair. He's got exactly the kind of running lines that you like to see, dirtied up from the the La Jolla and the Del Mar Derby. And then he was probably a very good bet in the Twilight Derby at that huge price. Certainly looks like it now that we have the benefit of hindsight. But this is a horse with a lot of ability, I agree. And Pratt getting back on seems like a really positive angle. Now, there are a lot of horses in here that figure to get pretty good trips, I would say, because they have tactical speed, one of which is Team Merchants. He's going to be a big price. He ran very well in the Let It Ride last time. That was a field that was made up of lesser types, unquestionably, from top to bottom. But he really handled them easily and did it impressively. He'll get the right kind of trip from just a little bit off the pace. I'm not altogether certain that he's crying out for 9 furlongs, but this looks like a tremendously interesting race on what undoubtedly is a very interesting card. I understand that you, of course, no longer by any means a novice contest player, having worked your bankroll up to in the low 20s in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. You're going to be playing a contest Saturday?
Yeah, I'm going to play a it's actually a local contest through Hawthorne. It's a $500 entry fee to get into the NHC. I have to say that I'm a little more interested in the BCBC now. It's just more my cup of tea. The live money, contests are just much more exciting and interesting to me. But I could talk forever about my Breeders' Cup experience. I won't bore the viewers out there. But I played a $2,500 double, Life is Good to Love is Only You. And boy, was I cheering and celebrating as Love's Only You found that little hole there, in mid stretch and won. And it's, I told the story on my podcast, the HHH Racing Podcast. People could listen to it. But that was a really nice hit. I went from about 340th, Nick, up to 13th. So with only about 3 or 4 races left in the contest, I was, as a first time rookie, I was 13th. And then I crashed out in the last few races. Tarnawa didn't exactly work out for me, and I liked Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie. Anyway, but I still was able to take some cash home, and really the experience is unbelievable. Yeah. If anyone has not played in the NHC, I can't recommend it enough. It was I had a blast.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I of course, like you, prefer the live money tournaments, and really, I mean, the extent of my tournament participation nowadays is live money tournaments, hoping to get to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. I will miss the NHC in January, unfortunately, with the Houston Ladies Classic being the same weekend, but I will be there in spirit, and I will certainly look for your name on the leaderboard if you can get there. Hawthorne's a great place to qualify. A lot of spots available, and now I've actually never gone. I've only driven by Hawthorne, but I'll be rooting for you tomorrow.
Well, the interesting thing about the Hawthorne, contest is that you can bet anything. Win,
right.
Place, show, exact, a try is the normal.
Multis,
right?
You can play, right, yeah.
Pick fours. You can play. I don't know. I'm not afraid to give away, any secrets. There's going to be many people playing. To me, I'll do maybe 2 entries. I'm not sure what I'm doing tomorrow, but one of my entries is going to be a pick 5 for sure. And I just play a big pick 5. If you can hit it for 5, 6, 7,000, I mean, you're going to be right there on the leaderboard. So I know a lot of people sort of dabble and they bet a little bit here, a little bit there. You have a lot of players that, don't usually play in contests before playing in these types of contests, especially after Thanksgiving. I would recommend anyone playing in a contest where you can bet anything. Be creative. I mean, don't just bet wins and doubles and tries. I'm going to play, literally a $400 or $500 pick four, pick five, and try to smash it several times. And, if I get lucky, I'll be right at the top of the leaderboard. So that's my strategy if I play 2 entries.
No question about it. Fortune favors the bold in any component of horse racing. Howard, thanks so much for joining me. I look forward to talking to you probably when we flip roles again in the near future. If not, then I know everybody out there can catch you on the HHH podcast every Thursday.
Yeah, it's usually on Thursdays on YouTube. Go ahead and check it out. The days sometime of the week sometimes change. But yeah, usually Thursday nights around 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Perfect. Thanks again, Howard. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to this Del Mar action. And I will talk to you again soon down the line.
Thanks. Good luck to everyone on Saturday. Take care.
And now joining me, I'm very, very pleased to say the inimitable Andy Serling, my dear friend, of course, of the New York Racing Association. Andy, good morning. I'm not going to ask you anything about Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving was fine. I saw my one friend besides you.
It was a work day for you, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I tried to forget that part of it.
Yeah, of
course. I'm glad to see you dressed for the occasion. You really got your best sweatshirt.
This started at 7:30 in the morning my time. Yeah, yeah. This is, that's how it goes. This is my office, though. So, hey,
mine too. Quite,
right. In fact, as you sip your tea as we get started, a non-coffee drinker. One of the biggest surprises in my life was getting to know you and finding out that you didn't drink coffee. I would have definitely bet on you being a coffee drinker.
Right. I have natural caffeine.
That's yes, through your endocrine system. Let's get started. We're going to talk about the Aqueduct late pick five on Saturday, which, of course, I know you finished on Wednesday night. A double draw for you.
I actually worked on it Wednesday night. I finished it last night.
Yeah, it was a good, it's a good car.
I don't want too much credit.
The Aqueduct racing is unbelievable. I mean, it has just been, it's been quite a show so far. And I think this card is definitely no exception. It begins with this really difficult two-year-old race going 6.5 furlongs on the main track. It looks like the major players in here are drawn mainly towards the middle of the pack. But how did you see this opening leg?
Yeah, same as you just said. It doesn't seem like anyone that's run is particularly compelling. I mean, they'll bet the 3-ply entry, and I think they're probably best used as Cs at best because, yeah, you know, one of them seems hopeless. One of them ran on the turf. I suppose split second Sonny could be a factor in the dirt, but it's going to get bet off turf figs. And, you know, fortunately it's the first leg, so you'll be able to see the board pretty clearly and see how horses are played in doubles as well with the CAW money. The 4, 5, and 6. And for me, the $500,000 two-year-old that worked 10 flat is going to take money, favor Todd Pletcher first, or I see David Argona made that horse 2-1 morning line, which leads me to believe that he probably saw works or something right, that were good. And I guess Digital Asset, who has some pedigree in First Passage, the dam was pretty good. So they're probably the ones that'll take money and the ones I would focus on, at least at this point. I don't know if you have any other clever ideas. Maybe Mary's Val, the 8 you throw in. I don't know.
Yeah, my worry about Mary's Val was I felt like she was on the inside last time. And if you thought the inside was good, which I know you put on the track trends, I kind of had the same note myself. Yeah. I wanted her to do a little bit of running. These mod horses that we just assume are going to get better second time out, they feel like they never do. I thought it was interesting that Send for Me second dam is Versailles Treaty. And of course, with a Shug McGahey horse being in the race, I thought it was kind of funny. And she, of course, produced Tsarland as well as George Vancouver. So there's pedigree here, as you mentioned, the 10 flat workout. Yeah, I picked it 4, 5, 6. So I have nothing clever to add.
5, 4, 6. So.
Yeah, it feels like, as you mentioned, David Aragona putting a little bit of a little extra starch into Favor's morning line likely is because of potentially some good workouts. That moves us along to the Central Park, which is the first of 4 consecutive stakes races. This is a fun race, and the Central Park winner actually races at Aqueduct on Friday's card in Never Surprise. This is a race that brings back together the 1-2 finishers from the Awad last month, as well as an impressive maiden winner in Cy Dog. Fun group.
Yeah, I agree. You know, General Ken is going to be the favorite, and the reality is he's the likeliest winner. I didn't put him on top because figured he'd be a super short price. He got a stupid ride last time, to be honest with you. I don't know what you would rate a horse that wired a field 5 lengths in front the whole time. I don't really know why you took that horse back. And you know, okay, if Gino's going to go, a sprinter stretching out, at least make him go a little bit. Just stop advocating the lead from the start. But, you know, that's just something that's just, it's like a disease around here. You'd like to think, and I know that the owner wasn't thrilled. You know, I talked to Louis Lazanero after it, and he laughed, and he said he's glad he won. He thought he'd probably be in front. So I imagine they'll try to at least be more forward here. I think Cy Dog, though, I know he got a fast pace to close into last time, but the way he was bet last time, it's like they didn't even expect him to run.
Right.
And I think he's probably okay. So I pick Cy Dog over General Ken, and I did put Grand Sonata third. Maybe that one can improve third time out. I can't imagine Gino beating General Ken. So it's sort of 3-1-5, 1-3-5 for me, you know, mostly 1-3.
Yeah, I picked it 1-3-5-2, feeling similarly about General Ken's ride. I was cursing rather vociferously around the quarter pole last time, thinking that Gino was going to wire this field. And it's one of those races, like, I guess if you were talking about a sporting event and you go back at the box score and you think, how the heck was that even close? And, I mean, General Ken literally was in front one stride. So right. I'm hoping that he gets a little bit more alert ride. There have not really been enough run backs as far as the Cy Dog race go. I don't really know if that matters to me. He was very impressive given the way that he, like you said, he wasn't bet and just roared past the whole field, albeit with a pretty decent setup. Grand Motion is also with second time starting turf routers who debuted with a win, 31% with a 313 ROI. It's a pretty strong number.
Yeah, with only 13 starters. But
right, it's limited supply, right?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. He seems like it's okay. You know, the second place finisher ran back the figure the other day, and
Dr.
third Brown's place finisher was eased at the eighth pole, so who would know what he was going to do if they actually tried with him throughout the stretch.
Right, I totally agree. I think it does end up shaking out that way. I wish Grand Sonata had a little bit more turf pedigree because I do think he took a real step forward, and I think he was disadvantaged by running behind Slipstream when Slipstream kind of had things a little bit more his way on debut.
Yeah, I mean, it was a faster pace than it shows on paper, but it still wasn't a blistering pace.
Right, exactly. We move along to the Discovery, which of course is going to be, I think, is actually a far more interesting matchup than a lot of people are going to give it credit for, because I'm of the opinion, I'm interested to hear if you feel similarly, I think this is a good opportunity to bet against Speaker's Corner. I much prefer Miles D.
I do too. I pick Miles D over Speaker's Corner. And I know David has him like 6-5 and 9-5. I know it's a Chad Brown factor. People aren't going to get past that 109 figure. And it's not like he doesn't have another fast figure to back it up, the 101. But I'm a little skeptical. I know Bill Mott seems to think he's a big time router, but I'm a little skeptical. And I think he's running here because he can run Olympiad in the Chagar. And, you know, as he said, he wants to find out if he really is a router because he didn't show he was in the Pennsylvania Derby.
Right.
And obviously if he is, you know, whether it's the Pegasus or other races, when you run a 109 figure like he did last time. And I don't have a real problem with that number. If it's high, it's like the Baby Yoda number. If it was high, it was high by 5 points, regardless of what he's done in the future. And if this one's high, it's high by 4 or 5 points because First Constitution had run a 90 and he got a 98. Dorsey ran second to him, but as we discussed before that race, he had a monster trip in his race two races right. back, and Backside of the Moon ran his 90. He runs every single time he runs. So, right. So I don't really have a big problem with that. I just feel like, you know, rushing along on the front end, the rail seemed pretty good that day, a relatively fair track, but it seemed like he had the run of the race. And I think Miles D, A, will be better around two turns. It's not like he lost to Speaker's Corner a lot in his debut. And I think it'll be viewed like Speaker's Corner. He's got a little bit of an aura around him that I don't think Miles D has. And while Speaker's Corner can win, I prefer Miles D, especially at a better price.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that Miles D doesn't let Speaker's Corner get too far away. I'm hoping that Manny puts him a little bit into the game early. I hope he's a little bit helped potentially by Manor House showing some speed too, just, you know, making things tougher on Speaker's Corner. The only hope, of course, is that Remember Mirage has not been riding here a while. So maybe the creed that everybody professes about not having to push speed horses has been washed out of his brain. That's at least, I guess, you know.
That's a delusion that you can live with if you want. I mean, I don't understand why you would ship Manor House for this race and then raid him. You know, it's just so dumb to bring him all the way up here. It seems like he's a worse. I'm not saying he's supposed to be, you know, a huge rush and be three in front, but he's not supposed to let Speaker's Corner get out of his sights. I don't disagree. Is Vindictive interesting at all, or did he just fall apart last time? Was he a little bit dressed up at Saratoga anyway?
I think all the above, if possible. I think that he was, I didn't love the ride he got last time. It felt like Irad kind of kept shoving him into the race, which is so atypical of his style too. But then, you know, they hit the quarter pole and you realized, wow, he's done. Yeah. And I mean, he was cooked.
He didn't lose by a length and a half.
No, exactly. Right. And they all sort of crammed together. Of course, everybody will notice the First Constitution, who was third in that race, of course, came back to finish second to Speaker's Corner. And he was third in that race with a trip.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not a good benchmark. Right. So, yeah, I wonder, I mean, one of the things that and I think you and I talked shortly before Vindictive's second Saratoga start was that the DRF Clocker report actually had him not quite training as well. So I wondered if maybe he was going the wrong way. And I think the likes of Run and Ray and Anchor, he was able to beat even maybe at 80%. So I wonder, in fact, I remember saying, you know, I thought that the Discovery Long Range could be a Vindictive Pipeline matchup. Chad Brown, of course, is keeping Pipeline a little shorter. He's a very good horse, but I think he'll be well represented with Miles D in what's undoubtedly a fun race.
No, I agree with you. And I guess with Miles D in here, there's no reason to run Pipeline. I know Chad was looking at, you know, whether he was looking at the Cigar or the Malibu. We'll see.
Right. That'll move us along to the Long Island, the centerpiece on this Saturday card, a mile and a half on the turf. And we have, I think, all the players you would expect to see in this kind of race, including the 1-2 finishers from last month's EP Taylor at Woodbine. I think they'll pretty much dominate the wagering, Muta Makina and La Dragon T. But I do feel like there are some alternatives. Did you?
I agree. I tell you what, I mean, on the surface of things, you have to sort of like La Dragon T, because nobody closed in that race besides her. And I thought she ran very, very well in there. The problem I have with her is I don't have any confidence that she's going to want a mile and a half.
Right.
She feels like a little less distance is better for her. And so for that reason, I kind of feel like Muta Makina is the better one, because you know that she can handle more distance. But I'm not thrilled by either one of them. The other thing is that people are going to see they won a grade one last time. Well, it's not really a grade one. It's a grade 3-2. It's probably similar to this race. It's a, you know, it's not graded by the U.S. graded committee. And while I think it was a stronger edition this year than last year, where last year was basically an atrocity, It was a decent race. I think that Christophe Clément's other horse is very dangerous near Sorel. I mean, you're talking about a horse that came off a 5-month layoff last time, and I don't think she had a terrible trip, but she didn't have a perfect trip, and she came within a few lengths of Warlike Goddess, and Always Shopping was in very good form right then. And I think people didn't realize what Warlike Goddess was going to that race. I actually picked her on top in here, and I'll say another horse. I don't know if you're supposed to give up on Harajuku right yet. I think Gramo's just made a mistake running in the Sands Point. Having her to be close to the pace in that race, she's just better off settling. And I think she can just settle here and make her run. I don't love her as a horse, but I don't think there are any killers in this race. And I think the mile and a half is going to suit her well. So I'm actually looking more at Sorel and Harajuku in here. I don't know about
you. Yeah, I thought Harajuku was incredibly interesting for some of the reasons that you brought up. I mean, it looks like the Sands Point's well short of what she wants to go distance-wise. And I think they overreacted a little to her being so badly pace-compromised in the Jockey Club race from a month before. And that was no fault of hers. This is obviously a filly who's always going to be a little up against it pace wise. But I do think the distance could be kind of a mitigating factor. You're at least going to get a price here in a race where I think that, you know, there aren't a lot of interesting price alternatives to the two favorites. I felt like she definitely was one. She might end up being a horse that's maybe a little bit better at four, and they're trying to do a little too much too quickly.
That's also fair.
But you know, we'll take a gamble on that at 8-1, right? I mean, that's a fair price, I would say.
And I don't know, where do you stand with the horses from Keeneland? I thought they both got such good trips, Summer and Saratoga and Luck Money. And I think they're both, you know, it feels like Summer and Saratoga improved with more distance. Luck Money has been okay. I didn't really like either one of them, but I didn't think they were impossible.
Yeah, I felt similarly. I mean, they don't seem like anybody that would surprise me, but I did think they were of a lesser variety. I mean, Luck Money has really not ever gotten, now I guess, I mean, speed figure wise, she sort of rounded back to where she was last year when she was good. But it does seem like, if, you know, even we didn't mention Orglond, who I don't think either of us particularly loves. I wouldn't be.
She win based on her last race. She should be 20-1 based on her last race. But with the Chad Brown factor, she's going to be in the 4-5-1 range. And maybe 20-1 is an over, but she shouldn't be under 10-1 here. And your last race was atrocious.
It was not good. Yeah, it was not good. She's 5-1 on the morning line. I mean, talking about comparative pricing, I'd definitely much rather have Harajuku at you know, 8, even 9-1 than Orglond at virtually any price. But yeah, I mean, I it wouldn't shock me if either of the Keeneland shippers do run well. Luck Money, I think, could potentially be a little bit more involved early, which might be a good thing. Joelle did take her pretty far back last time. I don't know if she necessarily wants to be that far back. We'll see. It wouldn't shock me, but she's not anybody I'm looking forward to betting.
All right.
Moving on to the nightcap, which is the Aqueduct Turf Sprint Invitational. Turf Sprint Championship, excuse me, I don't need to shortchange it.
It's an important championship. It's one that so many horses, I'm surprised there aren't shippers from all around the world for this race to become the official Aqueduct. Because look what being the Aqueduct Turf Sprint Champion did for Turn to Side. He sold for almost $750,000 for no reason.
This is so, like,
you know, where this race is almost invaluable.
This is like the 28th Eclipse Award category, right?
Really, it's like the Prix de Labai, the July Cup. You know, it's sort of all of them rolled into one.
Or the Grand Prix du American Jockey Club mile and five-eighths race.
The, yeah.
All right, with all that said, we actually have a pretty good field going postward. And, you know, it is a wonky time of year to be talking about turf sprinting, turf racing in general. And so I do think that some of the results do get a little altered by turf condition, weather, et cetera, et cetera. Let's actually start by talking about Turn to Side, who you mentioned, who you and I have definitely scoffed at quite a bit privately. We won't get too much into it publicly, but Turn to Side was purchased for an immense amount of money out of the dispersal for the late Paul Pompa, God rest his soul, and finally looked like the Turn to Side that went for big money last time. I was shocked at how well he ran last time. Is it possible, and I know this is a little bit more of a reach than people like you and I generally want to get to. I mean, could he be like a boggy course, cooler weather kind of horse?
Well, it's not going to be boggy. I mean, we've got about a quarter of an inch of rain.
Right.
And, you know, we're off the turf in a couple races on Friday, but I don't think it'll be boggy. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. You know, I suppose it's possible. I picked him third. He's not my tickets. I'm not letting him beat me. He ran well last time. He runs his last race. He can win here. Because the problem with this race, I said a problem. Maybe it's a good thing. Arrest Me Red might win. I mean,
the last time
was just ridiculous last time. And I picked him last time, but, you know, they knew he was going to win. He walked in the front end. How is Grateful Bread coming here and not showing speed?
Right.
So you have to imagine the pace will be a little bit more honest. So while Arrest Me Red can win, I'm not thrilled with him. And listen, I wanted to cut back with value proposition for this race. So I'm glad he's running here. And his last race will probably win this race. But you can't be overly confident to take a short price on him at 6 furlongs. So I'll use him. There's a difference between thinking maybe this is a reasonable spot to run him in here and thinking I want to bet him at 2-1. So I would use them, but I'm looking for alternatives. Do you have any alternatives to either those two or even Turn Decide? Or is Turn Decide your alternative?
No.
A goofy one.
Well, my goofy horse is Maxwell Esquire, but I mean,
I picked him on top.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, but he's kind of a pet horse of mine too. And I bet him last time under value proposition. He ran very well, much better than the running line would show. And I think he could end up getting a really favorable trip here. This is exactly his game. You know, and that's sort of what you alluded to. This is not necessarily value proposition's game, but you know, this is a horse that now third off the layoff, having shown that big step forward. I mean, two starts back, you can't hold anything against him. He had no chance with the...
He got completely and totally blocked the entire stretch. I mean, I read literally... I mean, I don't know how the chart... It's just stymied. I mean, he couldn't ride him the entire stretch. And he had
no, galloped him the whole way down the stretch. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that was part of the reason why I liked him last time. But yeah, he seemed like the one to me that I wanted it at what will end up being a pretty attractive price. And as you said, I mean, if Arrest Me Red and Grateful Bread duel in the early stages, it should certainly set the table for him.
And the other thing is, so at least last week, now the rails are probably out a little more and there's going to be a little more give in the turf. Certainly didn't feel like speed was any kind of advantage in these turf sprints. We saw some modest paces that just fell apart. You know, I know that you and I had our reservations about Ogotten Girl, but you think about it, that race just fell apart and it wasn't the only one. So what I think it means is these races are more fairly run. And I think that Recipe Red had so much the run of the race last time. And if you take out his last race, he's not really that competitive here. That's being nice.
No, he's not. And he has all the makings of a horse that's going to get way too much support, having speed, being a Wesley Ward trainee and having Paco Lopez when, I mean, really in all actuality, this is also a horse that I wouldn't be surprised to see scratch because I don't, Paco's not mentioned on any other horses. And of course, Wesley Ward scratches about 94% of the horses that he enters.
That's a fair number.
But I will say that, you know,
Ronnie's the morning line favorite. I mean,
I hope he runs. I mean, I wouldn't scratch any 3-1 shots that I owned, but yeah, it's a little bit different. But anyway, I mean, if he goes, it feels like an honestly run race, and that'll certainly set the table for the likes of Maxwell Esquire, as well as the other horses that should be coming from a little bit off of it, including Value Proposition.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think Value Prop can win. He's probably the best horse in the race. Just got to be the best horse at 6 furlongs, and that's a tricky gamble at a short price.
Yeah, maybe the all that time pulling and being headstrong and difficult going long was because he wanted to shorten up.
That was something I thought. And it's something that Chad Brown has said to me in the past about horses that are pullers and get a little headstrong. And sometimes, you know, you run them at 6 and the paces get faster. But whether or not that's going to be the case here remains to be seen.
It's the curse of having a million good routers. You don't ever necessarily default to thinking about which one may end up wanting to sprint. So
yeah, and I don't think, I mean... Right. I don't think turf sprinting is specific. A lot of times people run them in turf sprints because they feel like they're just not good enough to win going long. And I don't think that that's the thought process in most cases here.
I certainly don't want to get into connections thinking that if races end up with packed finishes, it makes them look better. But turf sprinting is definitely very, very good at that.
Yes, it's very good for telling your owner when you run 7th, beating a length and a half, that you really could have won with a little luck.
We were right there.
Right.
Exactly. Right on the cusp. Andy, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate
it. Thank
you. Of course, everybody can see you on America's Day at the Races today, tomorrow, Sunday, every other racing day at Aqueduct going through the winter. Of course, little should anybody think that this is a time of year where Aqueduct at New York Racing or Aqueduct in general goes into any kind of dark period. This is the funnest time of year.
No, I agree.
The race, I mean, this has always been the funnest.
Tremendous. I will not be in this Sunday, but I will be for a couple days next week.
A rare day off, one of which I will have to ask for having gotten up early to start this podcast. Thanks again, my friend. I'll talk to you a little bit later on.
Thanks.
Have a great rest of the weekend.
You too. Talk to you soon. See you.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the In the Money Players podcast. Nick Tamaro, very pleased to have joined you for this. And I thank my special guests, all 5 of them, of course, from the top, Scott Shapiro, Klaus Ebner, Blake Jesse, Howard Kravitz, and Andy Serling. I thank all of you for listening in. We really do appreciate it. We would be nothing without all of you, our subscribers, our listeners. We've got a lot of really nice Thanksgiving messages. Of course, take a chance to vote in the ABR Fan Choice category for best podcast. You know which one to click on. I don't have to give you any more advice than that. But until I see you next time, best of luck.